And there, the kings of Arzawa, who spoke a related Luwian language, repeatedly attempted to impose their control over the western third of the peninsula. And there were a number of lesser Luwian kingdoms, one of them known as Wilusa, which apparently is the Hittite word for Troy, and other smaller states, Mira, which is the Hittite equivalent of later classical Lydia, who appealed to the Hittite king to lend them support against the their larger neighbor. And so the Hittite kings intervened in the western part of the peninsula to impose their control, and we should always remember, by invitation of various princes. On the other hand, they were drawn east and southeast because of the cities of Mesopotamia and Syria. As I mentioned, those old trade connections had brought civilization up from that direction, and the Hittite kings from the start quite intelligently concluded that the chances to build royal power, to get money and manpower, to create the kind of states that the Hittite king wished were to be found in those regions. So from the start, the Hittite kings are pulled in those three directions. Hattusilus I is particularly remembered for his campaigns in northern Syria, where he subjected a number of cities. And archaeology has documented that the cities in these areas, and they were inhabited by two different people, Canaanites, people who spoke a Semitic language, and Canaanite is essentially the ancestor of Hebrew and Phoenician, languages known in the later classical age, and Hurrians, a rather mysterious people whose language is quite distinct. We can read it, and were regarded as the great teachers of civilization in the Near East. The Hurrians occupied northern Syria and western Mesopotamia. Later, their descendants appear in what is called Armenia in the classical age, Urartu in the Assyrian sources. And they were in many ways the intermediaries between Mesopotamian civilization and Hittite civilization. The cities of the Hurrians and Canaanites were a great attraction. And as I said, Hattusilus I in particular imposed his control. Hattusilus' son, a man named Mersilus I, who came to the throne around 1620, completed the consolidation of Hittite power in northern Syria. And it's a great testimony that the Hittite emperor could project his power into these regions because, as I mentioned earlier, the peninsula of Asia Minor is cut off from Syria and Mesopotamia by the great Taurus mountain range. And that meant that the Hittite emperor had to control the key passes, particularly the Cilician gates, that he had the chariots and the infantry to march into southeastern Turkey, known as Cilicia, a great fertile plain. Kuzu Wadna would be the Hittite name and gives rise to the classical name Cilicia. And then to cross another mountain range, the Amanus, a much lesser mountain range, onto the great Amuk plain of Syria, and from there imposes control over the Syrian cities. That was a real testimony to the logistical and administrative skills of this early Hittite kingdom. Mersilus, in addition, had reports of the fabulous cities to the south, and for reasons that are still not quite clear to us, decided that conquest of Syria was not quite enough. To show that the Hittite Empire was of age, he decided to conduct a massive raid down the Euphrates to capture Babylon. Still baffles scholars today why he planned to do this. I think he did it because, well, that's what great kings are supposed to do, conquer great cities. And it's there. And so the Hittite army marched down the Euphrates. This is amazing because Babylon's about 800 miles to the southeast of the Hittite capital. He marches his army down the Euphrates, surprises the Babylonian army, sacks the city, and then the Hittite army escapes north. Actually, the sack didn't do the Hittites very much good. They abandoned a good deal of their loot along the way, being chased by the irate Babylonians. And by the time that Mersilus got back to his capital, he had a welcoming committee of disgruntled nobles who assassinated him. Now, that incident brings up a couple of points about the Hittite king. As impressive as the armies and the administrative system is, this is still a monarchy that very much depends on the charismatic quality of the emperor. And a king who's away too long runs a risk of being killed. And one should, maybe we should even have a pause of silence for being great king of the of Hatti, because it is a high-risk job. Most Hittite kings, when acclaimed king, found that they had to satisfy all these nobles and retainers. And the first object of their reign was probably to eliminate all the brothers and half-brothers and nephews who would be contenders to the throne.